Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joining us on the HRP guest line, we go straight out to Mark Spears, senior NBA writer for the undefeated ESPN NBA Countdown reporter. Thanks for joining us, Mark. Tonight, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, pick one versus pick two. It's way too early to draw any conclusions, right?
Oh, no, it's super way early. That's something I could say. Cade, he missed training camp. He had an ankle injury. So basically his season debut, which was, about 2 weeks, a week and a half into the season, was his first game of any kind. So he's still working out the kinks. I thought he looked better last game. But the first couple games, he certainly, looked out of sorts. He missed a couple back-to-backs. In terms of Jalen, you see flashes. Like he had, the 30-point game, but he's had a lot of games where he scored 10 points or less. I've known him since high school, and I talked to him the other day, and he's like, look, the G League prepared me, but it only can prepare you so much for playing in the NBA. And, John Lucas told me he has to get a lot stronger. He's only 19 years old. He probably weighs 185 pounds wet, right? So I think for both of these guys, they're going to continue to get better as the season progresses.
Mark, do you like looking at what the Rockets have so far, though, in terms of a young nucleus? We know the four 19-year-olds in the draft, but you bring back a guy like Jayshon Tate, who looks like he's been a diamond in the rough fine that keeps getting better. You look at a guy like Kevin Porter Jr. that had a 50-piece last year, but even after a great offseason, has kind of struggled at the point guard position, but you know he's talented. What do you feel like this roster is right now?
Boy, it's almost like a glorified college team, right?
Yep.
basically like the G League Ignite. It's just really, really young. I mean, what do they have, like 8 guys, 21 or younger?
Yeah.
Am I right? If you take away John Wall from their roster, they're tied, I think, with Orlando for, like, the youngest team in the league at 23 and a half. So, this isn't James Harden's Rockets. This ain't Akeem's Rockets. This is, not Moses Malone's Rockets. They're going to take some lumps. This is basically going to be a season of learning. Let's see what you get for John Wall. But, I mean, at this point, I don't even know if you're going to get anything for him. Might be a buyout at the trade deadline or something. There is certainly some young talent there that is promising. But when you have that much youth, man, be patient.
See, and I think that's it, Mark.
It's going to take a while.
You get a guy like Jalen Green, you have the draft they had, and all of a sudden the expectations are raised exponentially and probably unfairly so from a team perspective. But you mentioned John Wall. What about Eric Gordon? Even a Christian Wood. I mean, right now it looks like the best thing you can do is play these young kids as much as possible and get them experience to see what you have. And if you still have Eric Gordon and even Christian Wood, you're holding back guys like Şengün and some of the young guards that they have.
Well, shoot, Christian Wood ain't too far removed from being 21, right? So I'm keeping him. He's still a really young. What he does is special. He could score and rebound, and he's going to continue to get better, so I keep him. But in terms of like Eric Gordon and John Wall, I see. But at this point, when you got so many young guys, so what are you looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want? Your team is young. What, you gonna get another veteran guy? You're gonna get some picks for him? Just kind of in like a precarious situation in terms of where they go from here. And there's a lot of guards there. know, that's another reason why I would have moved Christian, is it just, they definitely seem really, really guard heavy. So, I mean, I actually wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they take some of that young talent and perhaps flip it for some veteran guys that could help them win a lot sooner. I mean, Jalen's not going anywhere.
Right.
But do you really need all those guards? You know, they're all talented. They're all showing what they could do. It may not be tomorrow, but in 3 years from now, I don't think all those guys will still be on the team. All those young guys.
Mark Spears, senior NBA writer for the undefeated ESPN NBA Countdown as well. Too early to tell with Green and Cade. Is it too early to tell on Steven Silas? What do you think about him as an NBA head coach?
Man, he's a gem, man. I love that man. And got to visit with him. I've known him for a while. You know, been around his dad, great Paul Silas, who's a hoot. I just think he's the right coach for this team. You know, not only is he a great X and O's guy, but he was telling me about how he's keeping tabs on these young guys, making sure that they're okay. When Ruggs, you know, the wide receiver, had that tragic car accident where he drove 156 in Vegas last week or week before, he talked to his team about it and talked about how quickly, like, you could lose everything. He told me he's going to talk to them about, you know, the Astro World tragedy and, you know, my prayers and condolences to everybody affected by that. You know, he wants to take them to, you know, Civil Rights Museum and, the Black History Museum in D.C. and just do things that are more than basketball. And I think with the team so young, he kind of has to have almost like a college basketball coach mentality, because these guys aren't that – I mean, they're basically in the same age group of his eldest daughter. He's 17.
What's your take then on general manager Rafael Stone, who did not have any experience coming in but seemed like to be the guy that Tillman Fertitta wanted right from the get-go?
Well, to me, he did have experience, not in terms of how he'd had that position somewhere else, but he'd been in that franchise with that franchise so long and learned under, you know, Morey for so long and some other folks like Carol Dawson and whatnot, that I think that, you know, he was put in a tough spot. And I don't care how much experience you have or didn't have, like having to trade James Harden, like, first job is tough, right? And so he had to do that. But, you know, you're kind of hostage on what you get from him. But, like, getting the young kid from Cleveland who had his issues and now starting to turn him around, like, you know, finding Tate, like, I think he's done some really, really good things under some really tough circumstances. So he basically inherited, you know, a franchise on fire when you have to trade with James Harden. And I think under the circumstances, he's done pretty well.
Mark, thanks so much for coming on. Great stuff. Hope to chat again soon.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a great day.
Thanks, Mark.
Mark Spears, senior NBA writer for the undefeated ESPN NBA Countdown reporter. Keeping Wood. You know, it's something that we've been kind of on the other side of. Call him a special player. Look, offensively, he scores. He can rebound. Question is a little bit what he does on the defensive side. Contract running out soon as well. I mean, is it somebody that you're looking to extend and he wants a max contract? Or is it something where you try to get as much as you can for him if you can trade him at some point?
I respect Mark. I know he's got relationships. I do too. And I know a lot of people. And the thing that there's a lot of red flags around Christian Wood. It has nothing to do with what he's been averaging since he's been a Rocket. The bigger thing are some of the things that have come out of his mouth and other times things that haven't. And it all centers around things like the next contract I sign, I'm going to be a max player. And I deserve to be a max player. When he doesn't get the ball and he doesn't get touches, he goes into a shell, he pouts, or he makes it very well known that he's not getting it. The attitude changed when the money changed. And he has a different mentality inside that locker room and around that young, easily influenced team. And I think that those things all factor in. You saw him send out a tweet yesterday about all of a sudden out of the blue, I'm dedicated to Houston. I'm going to be here through the winds of the law, whatever it was. And whether it was his agent or him, they're hearing it too. They know the word's finally starting to get out. And that whether you think you're a max player in your next deal or not, It's how the league feels about you and what offers you get that allow you to feel a certain way. And right now, they're not adding up. So that's why I think the organization has the decision to make, not Christian Wood, before it becomes his decision that he can walk or you have to overpay him.
Yeah, I'm on your side of this. I think at some point you're going to trade Christian Wood. I don't know when you do it. The fact that he's complaining about not getting the ball in offense certainly doesn't make things easy. You wish that that wouldn't happen if you're a general manager, if you're a Rafael Stone. He also called Steven Silas a gem. And kind of like this Rockets team, kind of like Cade versus Jalen Green, far too early to call. Year two with a young team early in the season, still way too young to, or way too early to really tell what Steven Silas is, in my opinion. And, like, I need to see development this year. I don't really care about the wins and losses, but if Jalen Green improves as a player, if Kevin Porter Jr. improves as a player, if this team starts to gel a little bit better than it is now, if they start playing a little bit of defense, for goodness sakes, I will have more faith in Steven Silas than I currently do.
Well, and what I told you is, are they grasping what they're being taught to do? Are they grasping the offense? Right now, it doesn't look that way. It looks like there's still a lot of iso ball, a lot of high pick and roll, a lot of high picket fence with dribble handoffs, a lot of unorganized offense. And then defensively, are they rotating? Are they helping the helper? Are they doing the things to rebound the basketball so that they get stops? Right now, we're not seeing a lot of that stuff. That's where a coach is judged, especially with a young team. It's not in wins and losses like Nick Caserio will tell you, but when you have more talent than the Texans have from a Rockets perspective, you need to see development. You need to see progress. Right now, we haven't seen that, and we're only less than 10 games in, but we realize they've lost, what, eight or nine in a row, and now they have a chance to win. But by the quarter point and the midway point, you're going to start getting report cards for your coaching staff, too, and that's all going to be predicated on where this team is developmentally. Not wins and losses, but in the things that I just mentioned.
When can I start looking at NBA mock drafts? When is too early to start looking at NBA mock drafts? Can I start doing it now?
Oh, they already are. Look, they're telling you after last night's college openers that you know, that Chet Holmgren is climbing the draft boards immediately as a 7-1 do-everything rail thin guy that is going to be, you know,
he's a cheeseburger away from a buck 80.
Amani Bates is going to be number two, and they're going to line them all up for you so that you can stack them and rack them and overreact to them. So that's coming. It's already there.
Yeah. Holmgren, the NBA comp, Kevin Durant. I feel like that's unfair to check Holmgren. Did you watch any of that Duke game yesterday? The Paulo, how do you say his name? Banchero?
Pancaro.
Yeah. Apparently, he had Twitter.
I watched it.
You know, really going nuts about him. His NBA comp's Wendell Carter, which isn't a great comp.
I think he's better than Wendell Carter offensively. I think he's shown that as a big man with a really big body and a good genetic line, too, in terms of his mom played, and he's got all the tools. He's strong. He's fluid. But the thing is that really impressed me. Off the dribble, the pull-up from mid-range was right on. And, you know, he actually had the show stolen by one of his teammates who played even better than he did. But when you look at him in terms about on the next level and what we were talking about with Jalen Green, he's already got an NBA body. He's strong. He's physical. He's got all the attributes like we talked about with Holmgren and even Amani Bates. They're going to have to put on 20, 30 pounds of weight and muscle just so that they can start being competitive night in, night out. You don't have Pancaro's already there. Yeah. He really looks like he's the real deal.
6'10", 250. I was preoccupied. I was over at the Fertitta Center watching the Cougars improve to 1-0.
Talk about
overtime victory against Hofstra.
A little bit of a surprise. Underachieving, or the injuries are what you would.
I wouldn't say underachieving. I mean, it's a young team. Yeah. I mean, you lose a first-round draft pick and an All-American, and you lose another NBA player in Dejan Giroux, you're going to have a little bit of growing pains. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit trying to find an identity. Kelvin Sampson said that after the game. Said, you know, we have to find our identity. We haven't played a lot of games together. And they did have one of their best players out with a shoulder injury. Tremont Mark did not play.
Right.
So, look, you got the win when you didn't play all that well. That's always good. And I think there are going to be some growing pains for this team. But still, whenever it's conference time, whenever it's March, yeah, team's going to be
that's
ready.
That's why you told me and Brendan before the game that, much like what you did, taking Hofstra and the points, that we should probably have done the same thing.
Don't put that out there. Absolutely
scandal
not.
Scandal at ESPN 97.5.
Absolutely not. 713-780. No chance. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. The thoughts of Joel Blank do not represent Jeremy Branham. All right, is there a worse owner in the
this
NFL?
Time.
Chairman, CEO, guy. Whatever Cal is calling himself. Is there a worse one of that in the NFL? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
People on Twitch asking me where Tremont Mark was. Shoulder injury. Day to day. See how long he's out. But yeah, Hofstra's a pretty good basketball team, by the way. I think that they have a good chance of winning the Colonial. They had that Mark Cooks kid. I mean, no one knows who I'm talking about. But he lit us up. I mean, 25 points. That guy could play. Rice on Friday, and then Virginia a week from
Virginia lost to Navy.
Yeah, I didn't like seeing that.
I don't like my man Tony Bennett, the Wisconsinite, as head coach, taking L's like that. But that's kind of been his mantra, that he's always hyped up and overrated. He didn't win a national title, but shortcomings abound when you lose and everybody's always looking for that ups. Ohio State almost lost one last night.
I mean, early in
the
season.
They had no business winning, so those things are going to happen.
Yeah.
But, man, when you lose to Navy and you're Virginia and you're always ranked, that's a tough one.
Early in the season, you see a lot of upsets in college basketball. Young players, teams playing with each other for the first time. You see a lot of upsets early in the year. But, yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of seeing Navy beat Virginia with Virginia coming into town 6 days from now. Is there a worse owner, CEO, chair than Cal McNair? You can't call him the owner because he's not the owner. I looked up his bio a little bit earlier today. You know his first name's actually Daniel?
Nope.
Daniel Calhoun McNair. Cal, of course, short for Calhoun. Like, you couldn't write a better story, right? Like, he goes by his middle name, but it's short for his middle name. And if you read his bio on HoustonTexans.com, it's D period Cal McNair. So D Cal McNair is the chair and chief executive officer of the Houston Texans. McNair was named chairman in July 2018 after serving as the vice chair since 2008. Blah, 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 blah. CEO, blah, 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 blah. If you look around the NFL, like, Jerry Jones always gets a lot of I guess, bad PR, because he likes to talk, right? He's a little loose with the lips. He likes to chat a little bit. And
glory hole. He likes to talk about the glory hole and winning at all costs.
He likes his Whataburger, and he likes to save his Whataburger, too, which is one of the most bizarre scenes in Hard Knocks. Remember, he gets the Whataburger, but he'll let it sit around for like a couple of hours.
Isn't
and
it
eat
also
it later.
All the crap he eats for breakfast at McDonald's or something?
It was a McGriddle.
Yeah.
And not only a McGriddle, Joel, but he opens up the McGriddle and just covers it with tons of salt.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't expect that from an older gentleman. But anyways, Jerry Jones saying yesterday about this Denver Bronco loss, he said, Denver didn't do anything we weren't expecting. We anticipated it. I went over it carefully with Mike before the game. Oh, did you?
Really?
I went over it carefully with Mike before the game. What they came out doing, we anticipated completely. We just didn't anticipate them having that kind of success, and they stayed in it. So you have Jerry Jones that runs his mouth like this, says stupid stuff. What are your thoughts when you have an owner who, you know, has his own little radio segment each and every week? He likes to chat. He likes the camera. He likes the spotlight. Does that rub you the wrong way? Or are you okay with it?
No, and I've said this in the past when I've been on ESPN 97.5 with different shows. The thing that really irks me the most is he's an attention whore, and he's not only your owner, he's your general manager. And the fact that he can completely counter anything that your team is trying to do philosophically or otherwise systematically by just going out and talking to the media when you know whether you know what's going on internally, but you also know the narrative you want to go out externally, but you can't control it because right after the game, before you even get a chance to get to the podium, your owner's holding a press conference outside the locker room doors and he's just spraying bullets and he's just spewing whatever he feels like talking about. And then he's doing radio shows. I think it's counterproductive and I think it can be problematic. The one thing that I will say, though, is he's passionate. He's dialed in. He's following the team on a day-to-day basis. If he's talking to McCarthy like he indicates, and you have no reason to believe he's not, at least he's in direct communications on a consistent basis with your football operations, unlike the Texans. He puts his money where his mouth is to support his football team. He does a lot of the things that you want an owner to do. It's just I think that the whole media aspect and constantly searching out microphones and cameras is where you have a drawback with him. But I never question his passion or his dedication to the product on the field. Forget the fact that we talk about in the NFL as ownership, it's all about just dollars making sense by getting the most out of the bottom line. No, with Jerry Jones and Mark Cuban and the guys that at least in those two owners in Dallas, you know one thing's for sure. They're all about wins and losses and doing whatever they can to provide whatever's necessary to get the best players.
That's where I stand on Jerry Jones, too. Like, does he run his mouth a little bit more than you would like if you're a fan of the Cowboys? Yeah, probably. Does he say stupid things? Yeah, probably. He doesn't say anti-Asian remarks, though, at golf tournaments and play video games without any furniture in his, you know, office. Like, that, to me, is mind-blowing, that you have a guy who's an executive for an NFL team that doesn't have furniture and is playing video games. That blows my mind. And then just hearing him talk, like, you can understand understand that Cal is not the most intelligent man.
Nick is intelligent, and I am the owner of this team, and I've got next if you want to play Mortal Kombat for a lollipop.
Yeah. I mean, that's scary that this is the leader, the fearless leader of the franchise, of the NFL team in the city of Houston. It's sad. I mean, it's kind of a disgrace, to be honest with you. So, no, I would much rather have Jerry Jones. And for the reasons you said, he cares, right? Mm-hmm. He's passionate about his team. He wants to win. Does he like the bottom line? Sure, he does. All owners do. But he also brings players in. I know it's been a long time since they've won anything of substance, but they've been competitors. They're a pretty good team this year.
Best way to sum it up, Jeremy, and I think you'll have the answer right away on this one, but the difference between the two of them and the reason why you want Jerry Jones and not Cal McNair is, do you think if the trade came across Jerry Jones' desk and it said, hey, you're going to give up DeAndre Hopkins and all you're going to get is David Johnson and a bowl of soup, mm-hmm. you think that he takes that deal?
No.
No. I think if he's the one getting DeAndre Hopkins, he's all over it. But I think that it, in the other case and scenario that the Texans fans know all too well, the difference between him and Cal McNair is he ain't signing up or taking that. And he damn well is he's enforcing the fact my coach and my general manager better run that by me before they make that deal or it ain't happening.
The worst owners in the NFL, and the last I could find a story written up about this was a year ago. So it's a little bit outdated here. Like it's outdated to the sense where it has Cal McNair as the 24th owner in the NFL. The worst owner they have is Dan Snyder. And look, that's not hard to argue, right? I mean, the scandal that the Washington football team has had, they did go to the playoffs, though, last year. So would you rather have Dan Snyder? Would you rather have Cal McNair? Both are bad, but most recent playoff appearance, football team.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me because of all of just the lines that have been crossed with the Washington football team, from the cheerleader scandal to the email scandal to the fact that he basically fudged around getting further punishment by putting his wife in charge of the business side and the operations instead of getting someone really that knows what they're doing, that may be of color, that may be a pertinent hire instead of just a kind of a fudging the system deal. I'm not a big fan of Dan Snyder and the way he does business, whether it be business-wise or football-wise. So from that standpoint, at least you know that from an image perspective, whoever gets this franchise or whoever's talking about this franchise knows it's in a good spot with the Texans from a community standpoint. Those kind of things matter too.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not going to go and say that I'd rather have Dan Snyder running this team than Cal McNair, because I think Dan Snyder has run amok on the business side and he's crossed way too many lines.
That's the point, too. Like, it's aside from football. Like, we'll poke fun at Cal McNair because he hasn't been a great football owner, but you can't question necessarily the character, right? Although right. The recent story about him at the golf tournament, maybe a poor choice of words, but more stupid than racist, in my opinion. But Dan Snyder, I mean, he's got all the personal stuff on the other side as well, where I'm right there with you. But then, like, a couple of these other ones, Mike Brown for Cincinnati, they've been notoriously cheap. That's a pretty good one. They don't even have an outdoor facility in Cincinnati, if you can believe that. Jimmy Haslam, another one in Cleveland. So you have a couple there. Woody Johnson with the Jets and his son Chris Johnson. Yep. So those are like, that's the conversation you're having right now with Cal McNair, and it's a sad state. You know who's interested in buying an NFL team, by the way?
Yeah.
Jeff Bezos, Amazon, wants an in on an NFL team. One time, right? One time. The city of Houston, though, and Texan fans, they would literally take anybody. Like, they would take Mark Cuban to come and buy the Houston Texans from Cal McNair at this point.
Nothing wrong with Mark Cuban with what he does.
He's kind of rubs people the wrong way. I don't disagree with you.
If you have a problem with him being on the sidelines and sitting behind the bench and talking to the players and throwing footballs with them, that's one thing. But Mark Cuban wants to win, and he's, you know, look, he was the first. This is the way I always go back on Mark Cuban. He was the first to get it enough in terms of catering to players to get them to want to play there, that he made his locker room with flat screen TVs in every guy's locker, along with Bose sound systems and video games and their weight room and everything, all under the security of being a players only environment that players around the league started talking about immediately, going, well, I want that too. There's a reason why when Daryl Morey came in, he wanted to do similar to what Mark Cuban did and make the locker room a technology festival for all the different teams and players to talk about, because that is like a recruiting process to get free agents and players to want to play there. Cuban gives every resource necessary if it's going to help the team, and that's something that you always want. So I think that's extremely important when you look at it from the perspective of there's a reason why your fan base, when they heard this Jeff Bezos story, said, buy the Texans immediately. He's perfect.
Yeah.
There's a reason why when you're talking about the comments that Cal McNair made at the golf tournament, that everybody said, is this our Donald Sterling moment? Can we finally get rid of Cal? Because we know that without those kind of moments and without those kind of actions, He ain't going anywhere. But the desire is so deep and so great by this fan base that from the Bezos story to the comments that Cal made and the publicity around it, the first thought in every Texans fan's mind was, good, get rid of him right now. Sell the team or get rid of it because we want a different owner. We want a change now because that's where it starts.
Yeah, they want a reset. They want somebody totally new at the top because it's been a bad few years in the city of Houston for the NFL team in this city. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Committee is stupid, and the wheels on the Texas Longhorn bus, boy, they're squeaking. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about new brakes. I tell you about new brakes because I speak from experience. Most of the things, you guys know I don't speak on a company if I don't believe in them. I really believe in new brakes because they took care of my brakes right here at the station while I was doing a show, and it was painless, and it was really time. It was perfect from a time perspective, and the fact that it saved me so much time. They came to the station. We were doing the show in less than 40 minutes, in, out, fixed my brakes perfectly using the same parts that any other brake shop in town would use. Prices competitive with any other brake shop in town. But the bonus is where time turns into money is the fact that you're not waiting at a brake shop. You're not at the mercy of a slow, lazy mechanic that's going to try and upsell you on other things while he takes his own sweet time, and you lose 3 hours in a day trying to get to and from a brake shop and then get your brakes done. Nope, it's all taken care of you at New Brakes. Go to nubrakes.com, sign up right now. Mention ESPN 97.5, you save 10%, but more so than anything else, you save time and you save money because you went to New Brakes. They'll come to your house while the car's in the garage or the driveway. You could be cutting the lawn, watching a game, drinking a beer. It's all taken care of while you're doing other things. Your brakes are getting done. They're all certified technicians. They use the same parts with competitive prices and basically take all of that crap that you have to deal with out of the equation. They're fantastic. They do a great job. All the listeners that have asked me about them that have went to New Brakes are singing their praises too. You should be the next in line. Go to nubrakes.com. That's nubrakes.com.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. All right, so the College Football Committee, so up to their old tricks. Talking out of both sides of their mouths, the number one citation of why they have Oregon ranked ahead of Ohio State's because they beat them head-to-head. Never mind the fact that they lost to a terrible Stanford team that's sub-500. Meanwhile, they have Michigan at 6, Michigan State at 7. Both have one loss. Last I checked the head-to-head, didn't Sparty win that game against the Wolverines?
Yep, sure did.
And I don't know. Football Invitational.
It's the most mind-boggling situation when you thought you were escaping all the headaches of the previous system to get to a quote-unquote better system for all of college football, and yet here we are watching a committee with political aspirations in their back pocket, having discussions that are described in detail as being 30 to 40 minute arguments and conversations in the boardroom of a posh hotel just to figure out who they personally think are the best 20, 25 teams in the nation with basically no credibility in their back pocket. And I guess evidently they haven't seen what the new thing in sports is called analytics, where the numbers mean something. And even more so than that, what happens on the field, especially when it gets down to head-to-head competition, should be the end-all be-all. And when you're not using that, considering that, and putting that at the forefront of any decision you make, then you're in the wrong position and they have the wrong system. It's that simple.
We had a text from Nathan earlier. Does anyone else think OU's overrated? Look at their game, super close for how good they're supposed to be. Also, shouldn't OU be banned from the college football playoff? Who wants to watch them get destroyed at it again? Look, previous years shouldn't matter. They're undefeated, and if you go undefeated in the Big 12, and they still have work to do. They got Baylor, they got Oklahoma State maybe twice, regular season, and then the Big 12 title game. So they have work to do. I feel like they're properly rated, to be honest with you. Right there at number 8, they're behind, like Bob Stoops said earlier, 5 one-loss teams. If they win out, they're going to be in the playoff. And that's all you can ask for a team, right? If you win out, you'll be a playoff team. I think Oklahoma's fine with where they're at.
Yeah, no, look, I think for the time being they are. And again, this is what I said when we first started talking about this today. Again, this committee's best hopes and aspirations are that it's all going to sort itself out from conference championship games to the way the rest of the regular season is played out with some of the big games coming down in the Big Ten and the SEC down the stretch. They're hoping that a ton of these decisions are made for them because they've already shown the incompetency when they have to make them for us. And the only thing that we can at least kind of just roll our eyes on and go forward with instead of really pressing them on is the fact that we're still deep into the season enough where there's more games to be played where it's not going to be the end-all be-all. Now, if this was their final decision of the year and this was who was going to play in the college football playoffs, there would be an uprising and uproar, and I think you would absolutely see the end to this stupid system ASAP because of the fact that there isn't the leeway that there is right now. That's the only thing that's actually saving their bacon.
I'm tired of arguing about quality losses and strength of schedule and who looked better and special teams in the fourth quarter with 8 minutes to play. Give me a real playoff.
Yeah, the more so than anything else, when you're the head of the committee and the best response you have for why a team that beat a team a week ago isn't ahead of said team they beat is because, well, when we looked at the two teams, we felt like Michigan was the more complete team. Well, I'm sorry. Last time I checked, you aren't God. And when you check the fact that when the games are decided on the field and you're really deciding between two teams that have played as recently as just a little over a week ago, and you take the opposite of what we saw with our own eyes and the result that we all digested, you're an idiot.
Here's what committee chair, who also his day job is the athletic director at Iowa, Gary Barta, had to say on the decision between Michigan and Michigan State.
The arguments were going on in the room, just like I'm listening to you guys go back and forth. A week ago, it was discussed that Michigan might be the more complete team, offensively, defensively, every statistic. Michigan's ahead of Michigan State, but the committee certainly gave Michigan the nod. They were undefeated. They beat Michigan head-to-head. What's different a week later? Michigan won. Michigan State lost. The discussion in the room went back and forth, very similar to what you're doing now. But at the end of the day, we felt as a committee that Michigan was a better team and to be ranked ahead of Michigan State this week. Stay tuned. We get to watch again next week.
It's funny. He says they might have been better. Like he says at the beginning, they might have been better. You don't know? Like, at least have a strong stance if you're going to ride on this.
Thanks for the conviction, big guy.
Yeah, that was crazy. Meanwhile, Bo Davis, who's an assistant coach at the University of Texas, got caught yelling at the team on the team bus following a loss. Some player recording it on his phone. It got leaked. Here's how it sounded in case you missed it.
Need to get in the transfer portal. You want to go? Get in the. This ain't a game to me. And if you think it's a game, get the off of this bus. I got my ass kicked. And you will have real. You think it's a joke? And so you do transfer out of. I'm tired of this. This is real. And we want to laugh and joke. That.
Let me try to translate for you. Get in the portal, get off the bus, got his tail kicked, stop laughing, not a joke, transfer out of here, tired of it.
Story of it was, too, that the kids were having a good old time, yucking it up on the bus, just tearing it up like nothing had happened when they had lost another game that they should have won in a lot of people's minds, but they got it handed to them. I don't think there's a single thing wrong with anything that he did. If you got a problem with this and you think that cuss words are offensive, look, you got a coach in Division I football that's actually punching face masks that's getting suspensions for a game, going all Woody Hayes on him. That's understandably something a parent or someone should have a problem with. What I'd have a really big problem with if I'm a parent and I see that and hear that and I say, well, that's not how my child should be treated, well, then maybe I have a bigger problem looking in the mirror and how did I raise my kid? Because if I raised my kid to be a competitive athlete and I raised my kid to want to know what it means like to try and be a winner and do it everything to win, and when I don't win, to actually feel it because I put enough into it that when I don't get the results that I want out of it, it bothers me, but instead I'm yucking it and I'm having a good time on the bus. That's what you should be focused on. I want more coaches that are turning my kid into a grown-ass man by being a competitive athlete and understanding what it means to compete like that, because that's what life's all about. Life is hard. You choose what hards you want to focus on and how you want to get through them, but if you chose to play college football, that goes with the territory.
I couldn't agree more. This is why Texas doesn't win. Like, everybody always asks the question, they have more money than anybody in the world. They have the best facilities of anybody in the world. Why aren't they winning at a very high level? And it's because the athlete cares more about the athlete than they care about the team. So you brought in Steve Sarkisian to try to change the culture. You have Bo Davis crushing whoever was laughing on the Texas bus. Look, if you had that sort of attitude, it's why Texas hasn't been very good these last few years. I look at it from a much more macro point of view. The reason that Texas isn't good is because you're catering to the athletes instead of catering to the team. And look, Bo Davis, what he said, I have no problem with it either. Remember Steve Sarkisian kicked Joshua Moore out of practice the other day, and now Joshua Moore is in the transfer portal. Like, we kid with the Texans about, like, changing the culture and all that stuff. Like, you can't really do that in a professional organization like you can in a college.
Did you hear the story behind
College needs the culture. College needs that as the pillars of the dynasty, of the program.
Did you hear the story behind Joshua Moore, by the way?
I like what Bo Davis is doing on the bus. Change the culture in Austin.
Joshua Moore, according to an ex-Longhorn that does radio in Austin that the bench had on this morning, Joshua Moore last week had one drop in a key situation, had another drop that turned into a pick in a key situation, had, I believe, a fumble in another situation, and when the team reconvened on Tuesday to start practice, he was late and no other coach would confront him on it. So when Sarkisian did, he almost physically started to get into it with Sarkisian. You know what, son? You got no place on my program, and I will do anything in my power to convey to whoever's looking at you to be very well prepared for the fact that this is exactly why this program, with all the different things you said that are positives, this is why this program hasn't won in part in the past, and this is why I'm going to change that culture. We talked about culture. You know what? When you got all the resources and you get all the talent Texas does, you're not the Houston Texans. You're not trying to find a few players to build around. You've got them continuously year after year after year. The reason why you're not winning is because you're not getting the right people to surround those players so that they understand what it means to win, what it means to lose, and what it means to compete.
If I'm Sarkisian, I'm trading wins for building the culture in year one because you feel like that's going to put you in a better chance to succeed in future years. Rod Babers was that Texas Longhorn. He was on with the bench earlier. He talked about the video getting out.
And the video getting out, right, the video leaking, it shows you some of that, right? I don't know what the young man thought. Maybe he thought that he would gain some sympathy, that maybe Bo Davis would get canceled, right? He'd have to go out and apologize. But actually the opposite had happened among Longhorn fans. There are some people that think it's inappropriate, but most Longhorn fans are like, hey, that's what I've been yelling at my damn TV for the last 4 weeks. So I'm happy that a coach is actually communicating that to the players, because there was a sense that, Do the coaches and the players understand how dire this is?
Yeah, I think Rod Babers summed it up well. I thought you summed it up well. 713-780-ESPN, what were some thoughts you had listening to Bo Davis just ripping the Texas defensive bus after a loss? I had buddies telling me it was like the Augie Garrido speech whenever he was there at Texas as well. 713-780-3776. When we return, midway point of the year, let's grade this Texans debacle. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. I believe in Fitz Roofing, again, because I believe in them personally. I know Corey, the owner. He's also the vice president of the Houston Roofers Association, which means not only does he know what he's doing, but he's respected by his peers. It's exactly what you want when you are looking at doing anything around your house, from a new roof or a roof repair on your business or your house, to all the different ways that they can do home repairs for you and fixer-up projects with you, or they can put a new fence around your yard. All you got to do to see everything that they offer is go to FITZRoofing.com and then pay real close attention, because the biggest thing they need to take away is they do free, no-obligation inspections that cost you absolutely nothing. They come to you. They tell you what they can do, and they go on with the rest of their day. You want them to come back and do the work, make the appointment. You're going to find out before, during, and after the sale, there is nobody better doing most incredible work with the best customer service than Fitz Roofing. They have the best warranties in the business. They have the best ratings across the board. Facebook, Home Advisor, you name it, they've got them, and their ratings are fantastic. And again, everything that they do, the products that they use, they're a CertainTeed Select Shingle Master company. Only 1% of the roofers in the entire United States have the criteria to get that status. They got it. You need it. You go to Fitz. They take care of you. They do great work, and you'll go back to them and recommend them to friends. Check them out today, FITZRoofing.com, or get that free no-obligation inspection, 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Head-to-head matters, yes, but you have to factor in who teams lose to. Michigan lost at the time to ranked number 9 Michigan State. Doesn't matter what they were at the time. Michigan State lost to unranked Purdue. The difference is enough to offset the head-to-head. Besides, this is all up in arms over this is pointless because they'll get to settle on the field in the remaining games. I do believe that. It's a good point, 7771. The problem that, look, if you want to argue with me that Michigan should be ahead of Michigan State, fine. You can have that argument. You win that argument. But then you can't also have Oregon ahead of Ohio State. Oregon has a terrible loss to a terrible Stanford team. That loss looks worse and worse by the week. So if you want to put Michigan ahead of Michigan State, all the power to you. But you can't put Ohio State in front of, or Oregon in front of Ohio State. That's the problem that I have with that 7-7-1. 8-3-2-7, I know it's a long shot with the Dodgers not making the qualifying offer to Kershaw. Is there any chance the Astros make their rotation to six-man and reduce the number of starts? Yes, they can make it a six-man, but they're not bringing in Kershaw. If they go that route, it'd be Justin Verlander.
Isn't Clayton Kershaw just a little bit more glorified Zach Greinke? He's lost his fastball in a lot of ways. He still can pitch in terms of, like, between his ears. But overall, if I'm going to spend the money, which I believe Kershaw would still command in terms of starting pitcher money or ace-type money, I'm going to go on a guy that has a 95 and up fastball. I'm going to go with a guy that still can overpower you when he doesn't have his best stuff. I'm not going to go with a guy that has lost his greatest attribute over the course of his career. Kershaw, yes, he's always had a deadly curveball. He can change speeds really well. But his fastball and where he was able to place it has always been one of his strengths. It's like old Zach Greinke versus current Zach Greinke. There's a massive difference simply because of the lack of velocity.
Yeah. It always depends on what's the dollar amount, right? It always depends. Like, if you can get him for $5 million,
sure.
Okay, then kick the tires. But
well, you got Wade Miley that 1 year for right. $5 million, and it was the biggest deal in the history until the wheels fell off.
Well, it depends on what's projected, right? Like, we look at the projected salary for Kershaw, and it's out of the Astros' range. And to me, it should be out of anybody's range for a pitcher at Kershaw. Kershaw is going to get by on his name. To be honest with you, wouldn't surprise me if he ends up in Anaheim, to be honest with you. Take the day off work and play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5 Occasional Invitational presented by SiteJab.com, benefiting the Latino Learning Center. This year's tournament takes place Wednesday, December 1st, 10:30 a.m. at Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer, beverages from Michelob Ultra and Cutwater Spirits, so you won't be thirsty. You also won't be hungry. Lunch from Frankie's Italian Kitchen, dinner from the Orleans Seafood Kitchen, 18 holes of golf, an award ceremony immediately after the tournament. Register now at ESPN975.com. You won't regret it. It'll be a fun day on the first day of December. All right, midway point of the year in the NFL. Houston Texans, what's the word to describe? Abysmal?
What are you doing, Jim Rome over there?
What's that?
Ruffling the papers and
stacking. Does Romy do that?
Romo's always big on ruffling the papers and stacking them on the desk.
What I always remembered Rome about was he would always say the name over and over again. Like, he'd be like, David Culley. I tell you, that Culley, he's a junkie. David Culley. What a coach. He's a nice guy. David Culley. Can't win
hilarious.
A game. Hilarious. Yeah. Hilarious, that Culley. Chews his lips left and right. All right. Midway point of the year. Texans are terrible. Debacle. Horrendous. What are words to describe the Texans so far at the midway point of the year? 713-780-ESPN. I want to hear you describe, Houston, a word to describe the Texans at the midway point of the year. 713-780-3776. I like to do this with the teams that we're covering at the midway point of the year. Head coach David Culley. Grade him at the midway point.
Good Lord. C minus.
I'm giving him an A. I'm giving David Culley an A. And I know that this doesn't... This
you
sounds,
of all people, too.
An A. Because people are confusing what David Culley's job is. David Culley's job is not to win. Let's not kid ourselves. If the Texans were trying to win this year, they would not have hired David Culley. David Culley's job is to just get through the season. Get through this debacle. Get through the rebuild. Get through the hard reset without any good talent. They have one of the worst rosters in the NFL. If it's not the worst, it's the second worst in the entire league. You didn't bring David Culley in here to win football games. You didn't bring him in here to make good football decisions on 4th and 3 from the other team's 33-yard line. You brought David Culley in here to have a good attitude as you go 1-16. And David Culley's doing a tremendous job at that. I'm giving David Culley an A at the midway point of the year.
How are you doing that when you have been right on board with me? And Greg Rajan of the Chronicle basically was listening to us and wrote a whole article that he sent me in terms of...
No wonder you could read that. I tried to click it, and I was like, I'm not playing a dollar for 3 months of this.
No. But the concept behind it was, and I appreciate him actually sending it directly to me for us, because he does listen to the show, is the fact that he basically chronologically went through all of Culley's missteps in terms of the mismanagement and all the things we've highlighted from, you know, the third down, you know, decisions, the timeout decisions, the fake punt, the punt off the guy's back.
He punted on third and 10.
You know, yeah, yeah. I mean, all those different things and more. And this is something that you've been harping on and harping on. And now you're going to give him an A?
Because his job is not to win. He's a terrible in-game manager. We point that out every Monday when we Monday afternoon quarterback. We know that. But we've been fooled into thinking what the role of the Houston Texans head coaching job is in 2021. The goal and the objective for the head coach of the Texans this year is not to win games. It's not to make sound decisions. And I understand that's what a normal NFL head coach is supposed to do. This might be the only time in NFL history where a head coach is not supposed to win. But he's just supposed to kind of be on the ship and ride it out to the end of the season, maybe that two seasons.
That ended with a P, right?
Ship.
Okay.
Ship.
Just check it. Because, you know,
yellow
you
leather,
said,
red leather.
You could have said the other if we were on satellite and you would have been accurate as well.
Look, I'm having a little bit of fun with it. I mean, he's not a good coach. He's not a good game manager, whatever the case may be. But the job of this year's head coach is not to win football games. Offensive coordinator Tim Kelly. I guess we can take this one a little seriously.
I like Tim Kelly in the fact that he's tried. You also, in order to be effective, have to have the players capable of carrying out what you're trying to do and have talent. I don't believe he has much of that. But I think that Tim Kelly, without Bill O'Brien breathing down his breathing on his neck and over his shoulder, is a different kind of coordinator. Is he a great coordinator? No. Is he a decent coordinator? Sure. I'll give him, again, a C. I'm not going to give him more than that because this team has been so bad. But I think early on we saw that if he had weaponry and resources, he could move the football. He could be effective as an offensive coordinator. So I'm not going to crap on him. And I'm not going to also overblow him like you just did David Culley.
I actually thought Tim Kelly was doing a pretty good job at the beginning of the season. I think he's been really bad later in the season. The quick passing game with Davis Mills gave you absolutely, like they had, what was it, 32 consecutive drives without a touchdown. You can't give an offensive coordinator a good grade whenever they have 32 consecutive drives without a touchdown, despite how bad the roster is. And then when they get Tyrod Taylor back, and you're actually running it about as good as you've ran it this year, and Tyrod Taylor's playing maybe his worst game of his NFL career, and you throw it 40-something times in a one-possession game. I mean, Tim Kelly, to me, I'm giving him an F. I didn't know I was going to go there, but I'm giving him an F. Like, if there's one coach that's not back next season, it's Tim Kelly.
Well, I think because he has ties to Bill O'Brien, too, that I can't see him being here for the long term. But, I look at these kind of things and say, at least he's not Matt Nagy. I mean, at least when he did,
I don't know.
When
Nagy he had was the coach of the year once,
you forget some of the drives and some of the bright spots of Davis Mills when he did have a couple of games and a couple of drives where you said, okay, you know what, you're keeping him kind of in the confines, you're keeping him to where he's not trying to do too much,
safe,
but they were safe, and that's why I gave him a C because he played it safe, but you know what, he moved the ball, he got some results. He kept Davis Mills from embarrassing himself in a couple situations with a game or two where he was what you were hoping Davis Mills to be. Because on the flip side, you're not Matt Nagy, right? You're not going to take a true talent like Justin Fields and then keep him in the pocket so he can get his head ripped off with a bad offensive line and go, yeah, that's what we're supposed to try to do on offense. So, and Matt Nagy has a hell of a lot more experience and he was more highly regarded coming in. So that's why I'm not going to give him an F, but I'm not going to give him an A.
713-780-ESPN. One word to describe the Texans at the midway point of the season. 713-780-3776. Debacle. Terrible.
Embarrassing.
Awful. Embarrassing. 771 saying train wreck. Keep it coming. I mean, it's a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We're talking Texans for the next hour. Send us in your one word to describe
the Texans.
We're not talking
Texans for a full 7-1. Hour.
We'll say some of the funny ones. We'll say some of the funny texts. 713-780-3776. Defensive coordinator.
I was going to say, Lovie Smith started out for me really good, fell off a little bit. But you know what? You look at some of the games he's kept you in defensively that you didn't think you had any business being in. He's gotten a pass rush out of some guys that don't necessarily look like they're all-world pass rushers. I've been a fan of Lovie Smith in terms of just his stability as a coach, too. But, again, I can't give any team – with a team with a record as bad as one win, I don't, at this point in the season, I can't give anybody A's and B's. I'll give him a C+.
I'm giving Lovie a B-. And I didn't expect much from Lovie Smith to come into the season. I thought it was a questionable hire at best. He failed at Illinois. It's been a long time since he was in the NFL. I didn't like the hire, to be honest with you. Again, very bad roster. Not a bunch of very good players on the defensive side. They're DVOA, Football Outsiders, 21st in the NFL. They're outperforming their talent by a mile.
And again, that's when I went back to the Tim Kelly analogy, too, in the fact that you can only do so much because if you don't have the talent to execute whatever system you're running and game plan, then you can't be effective. At least he's not rock bottom.
Yeah, aimless is a word to describe the Texans organization. 713-780-3776. Your one word that describes the Texans at the midway point of the year. 713-780-3776. We'll read the best text when we come back. Also, Astros do not need Carlos Correa. True, untrue, you tell us. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.